So today I'd like to talk to you about a study that I worked on, looking at factors that predicted resilience in aging, and we'll be talking about a little more about what that means, but I also looked at it in terms of a gender perspective. So one thing most startling is being a baby boomer, and I think some of us in the audience are baby boomers, it's very startling to realize that our cohort is going to be, by 2030, all of us will be at least 65 years old, and that most of us, and that population will be 19% of the whole population by 2030. And right now it already happens that there are more women than males, and we'll talk about that. But also what's pretty interesting is that the minority group will be higher in percentage as we get older. So certainly there's importance in trying to focus on what is important to create, to promote survival as well as good quality of life in this transitional cohort as we go through the ages. Along with that, mental health, it's estimated that 20% of 55-year-olds and older have some mental health issues. Most commonly are depression, bipolar disorders, anxiety, and cognitive impairment. And mental health is a factor associated with suicide. Among 85-year-olds and older, older men have at least 4 times the risk of suicide than the general population. And what's interesting is women and men, we experience age differently. Whether it's because of a accumulated experience of lifetime where we are entering or not, we're delaying being in the workforce, so it impacts us financially, and so as we get older, we're more likely to be impoverished, have less retirement income, and pay more out of pocket, and also maybe because we're being paid a little 25% less than men usually, that we end up not having a whole lot of money at the end. But basically we're financially worse off than men. And also in terms of health, we have we live longer, but we're not doing so well in terms of comorbidity and frailty. We have a higher risk of having poor quality of life, decreased life satisfaction. Okay, so anyway, so you got these two things in terms of women are not doing that well, not only physically, but they're also poor quality of life, decreased life satisfaction, increased loneliness, and lower self-esteem. So what we want to talk about is really they're among us who, even despite all these challenges, they're resilient. They do better despite the adversities. And so what we really want to look at today, what I was interested in, is looking at how are individuals different in terms of being resilient. And Hill has created this whole model of positive aging, where he describes it as resilience in aging, where individuals choose actively their well-being regardless of life changes, so that the ability to choose how you deal with adversity makes you resilient. And Hill's model is taken from the positive psychology framework of Seligman and Csikszentmihalyi. And it's a psychological construct where individuals are very much able to actively reframe their perceptions and reactions so that they can regard life as worthwhile even in the presence of chronic stress. So I was interested in this model, and Hill's model is kind of interesting because it looks at chronic stress within life resources to create resilience. And in this case, we're talking about resilience and positive aging. And he takes from this various elements. I'm so sorry that this is being very irritating here. He's looking at various elements from various theoretical frameworks. For example, social support, he takes from the social construct vision theoretical framework, where relatedness is important. He looks at control from Bandura's self-efficacy model, where through control we feel more efficacious, and therefore it impacts our perception of growing older. And also from Seligman's positive psychology model of attitude and optimism. So we'll be talking about these different elements today, but basically what's interesting is that he looks at these factors and how an individual resorts to different factors in a different way when they are under chronic stress, and that how these in themselves create resilience in aging. So there's actually surprisingly not that much out there in terms of biopsychosocial differences in aging. And so there's some literature, but I went ahead to look at how do these elements really play in terms of gender, in terms of males and females, because I was interested in seeing, do males and females use these different aspects, different resources in a different way as they age? So what's interesting that you find is there's research out there to say that, and you've probably heard this in many other forums, is women are better at creating social support. We get it. We're kind of naturally bound towards developing relationships, creating networks. And in terms of aging, social support is very important because it provides us purpose and connectedness. So in the literature, you'll find that women are the ones more likely, as they're aging, to really work on their social support system. And men, as they age, tend to get a little grumpy and withdraw and are not as good in terms of developing this resource. So basically, when we're looking at quality of life and gender studies, you will find that social support is a big element among women, and it provides us purpose and connectedness. Loss of control is another factor that's very important, and once again, as I mentioned, it comes from the Bandura self-efficacy model, where we're talking about sense of control is able to control outcomes. And with aging, there's a fear that we're going to lose our independence, lose our autonomy and productivity. So control is a very important factor for men, it seems, that is particularly important in studies looking at how does loss of control impact depression. And with men who have lost a sense of independence are more likely to have depression, to have impaired cognition, and it impacts their mortality as well as quality of life. Another interesting element, as you recall, in our model, optimism, is also something very important for men in that it's associated with increase in general health perception. Optimism in this event is described as a general expectation of favorable outcomes, and so it has actually, interestingly, a higher protective effect for men in regard to mortality as compared to women. So in terms of males, you can see that control and optimism are very important in terms of their study on depression and gender, and it really goes into talking about self-efficacy, financial and health control among males. But what's interesting is even though we acknowledge that there are differences in terms of how we age, as I mentioned, we live longer, women live longer, have more comorbidities and have more financial issues, the interesting thing about the literature is that it really looks at men and women. What I got interested in is that if we have such different life experiences and that they're among within women, within men, there are women who are doing better, there are men who are doing better. Even why not control for that experience and look within each gender group and see what is it that pulls up those individuals and what can we learn from them? And what's interesting is O'Leary and Padgham bring in the concept of empowerment, which is exactly what I was talking about, in terms of there's just an inherent difference in which how resources are obtained and used depending on the individual experience, and particularly with gender. So in the model that I am using today, we are including gender as another element, and really the interest is to see within each gender group, how do the different factors work in terms of contributing towards resilience? So, my research question was to look within the female experience, what are the protective factors towards positive aging? And within the male experience, what are the positive factors? How do we differentiate from resilient individuals? I was fortunate enough to find the Health Retirement Study of 2004, sponsored by National Institute of Aging, which actually contained the question about rating the aging experience. And they also had this wonderful questionnaire, which was called the Psychosocial Leave Behind Participant Lifestyle. So what they did, in 2004, they had about 20,000 participants. They randomly sent out this questionnaire to about 4,000 people. And it actually got an amazing response. And this is what this study is based on. So there are about 3,262 individuals who completed this questionnaire. It was an older group, 67 was the mean age. Their education was pretty educated. They were more married. It wasn't as diverse. It was mainly white, and females were more preponderant than males. The variables that I looked at were a rating of aging, and it was asked on a 1 to 5. How do you rate your aging experience? With 5 being very positive and 1 being not that great. It used standardized instruments to measure social support, perceived control, and optimism. And it had moderating and mediating variables, including socioeconomic status, health, chronic stress, in addition to age and gender. Statistics that we used included looking at descriptive work, descriptive statistics, and the bivariate statistics of ANOVA and the student's t-test to really look at any significant associations between the different variables. I also did some multivariate statistics to really look at multiple regressions, see how those different elements of the model, how much they contributed to the rating of aging across male and female. And then I looked at logistic regression, predicting how does that experience reflect within each group. And we'll talk a little bit more about what that looks like. So in terms of the population frequency distribution, this group was a pretty positive group. 55% indicated that they thought their experience of aging was positive, with a mean rating of 3.6. They were also a pretty healthy group. Only 43% felt that health got in the way of their whatever they wanted to achieve. And they were chronically stressed. About 38% of them were chronically stressed. And that variable included everything from financial, economic, medical, social challenges. The multiple regression model that included those different factors actually did really well for males. It explained about 45% of variance in the rating of aging in males, as compared to 29% in females. And within the model, social support and optimism, very interestingly, were significant for males, along with chronic stress. And for females, optimism and chronic stress were significant. What was also interesting in the logistic regression, and now I'm looking within each female group in terms of resilient versus non-resilient, and each male group. So for the females, control was very important. So individuals in the female group who were resilient, if they had more control over what they perceived control, they were more likely to rate their aging as positive. So that was a factor that was important within the female group. And what I used for control as proxy was health. So basically, and we'll talk a little bit more, if you felt your health was under control, you perceived as a resilient female that you rated your aging was positive. What was really interesting is also that for males, if you had less loneliness, you've rated your aging as positive as compared to non-resilient males. And so it kind of goes against the grain of what we suspected might happen. If you recall, initially we talked about social support was important for women, but right now you can see that it's actually very important for men as they age. And we talked about control being as important for males, and now you can see it's actually very important for females as they age. And then what was actually fascinating, and this went totally against positive psychology, is there was a group that decreased optimism was a significant factor for resilience within female and males. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But these are the kind of statistics that you panic and you go, oh my God. And so I actually did go back and redid everything, and it came out the way that it came out. So, you know, for those of us who've done statistics, we're like, oh my gosh. So basically, what does it mean that increased control through health predicts resilient women from their non-resilient counterparts? So I thought about this. And, you know, as I had said, you know, women are living longer, they're a little more sicker, they suffer comorbidities, there's more financial distress, more out-of-pocket expenses. So it's important to control their health and to manage their finances and quality of life. So it kind of makes sense that if they can control their health, then they're probably going to rate their aging as positive. So this is something that's really important within the female group. And then the decreased loneliness for men, what is that? Well, males, as we had said, they have less ability than females in reaching out and creating friendships and empathy. And if they're depending on a partner, a female partner or a spouse throughout their life to do so, if they find themselves alone, they don't have a clue of how to do this, right? So it makes sense that the men who are successful in somehow creating those social supports are actually doing better and are more resilient than the males who are not able to do so. And thus we have our social support within the males that's so important. So let's talk about this optimism. What does it mean? Because it really did go against the positive psychology mantra of positive thinking, in that decreased optimism is a predictor for resilience within each group. So it's true, I went back to the sample population, and overall this population was less optimistic. So it might be a population characteristic that's coming into my findings. But then I also looked at the quality of life. And despite having a lower range of optimism, these guys were happy. I mean, they had good quality of life. So that was kind of interesting, that you can still not be terribly optimistic, but you can have a good quality of life. So what is that about? So I went further into look at this group. And what was really interesting is that this group that was considered less optimistic but rated their aging as positive, they were more likely to have a good sense of control. You can see 14.7% versus 5% of the overall population. They had a good social support, 35% versus 13%, and they were healthy. So even if you weren't the most optimistic person, if you had those supports, the sense of control and good health, you were going to be okay in terms of feeling resilient. So I just wanted to share this data with you. There's some strengths and limitations to the study. First of all, I think one of the strengths is now that we're understanding, it's important to understand resilience within the same experience context, because that helps us identify what we can learn from our resilient counterparts. It also encourages us to broaden the concept of gender. I mean, this is a very traditional male-female gender definition, and it would be very fascinating to see In terms of transgender populations, like what is that experience in terms of how do we get resilience in transgender aging? And also, optimism and positive psychology, what is that? Can we make it more flexible? That's another thing to think about. And certainly, are there other measures that would be better? In this study, we didn't have that many measures for control, and we used health as a proxy, but certainly that would be something to look at, as well as making it more culturally diverse, in that do different cultural groups look at resources differently. So the clinical significance is that despite positive psychology promoting optimism, I find that if you keep telling a person who's absolutely miserable and older that be positive, it does not make sense to them because their life is not that wonderful. Yet, if this person has, so it creates stress. It creates stress, and it does not jive with their personality makeup. But instead, if we promote flexible optimism, a realistic optimism, which is something that Seligman and all are actually working on right now, and we encourage clinically that our clients or patients, we encourage them creating better social support, having better emotional support, and really healthy lifestyle, I think that would be something that clinically we can benefit this group in terms of resilience. So that in looking at resilience, as I had mentioned in the beginning, we need to look at how do we promote this cohort that's coming through that's going to be 19% of our population, and really understand that not the same thing works for everybody. And policy-wise, what's important is that, in terms of policy, and we're looking at our support for our elderly population, it's really to be aware that, as I said, it's not all one fits all, that we need to understand that social support is actually really important for males, financial support is for females, and healthy lifestyle practice. So when we create policy, we need to bring in the idea of connectedness and being able to feel purpose and be engaged and to have a sense of control through health and also to feel very much empowered in that we learn from our counterparts and not across groups that make no sense. So policy formulation needs to also recognize the differences. So with that, I end my presentation for this morning.